Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant,
everyone. That was a poem written by Jay Hatter and put to music and sung by the poet Shout Even Shy. A endearing tune that we've come to love and that opens most of our shows. You are listening to A Team of Voices Radio, sponsored by AP Taylor. And this is Deborah Lee. And we are all hanging out at allpoetry.com, one of the largest sites out there. If you are a member or you decide to join, which it's free to do, you can look us up under the group tag, A Team of Voices, and I'll meet you at the door. You can hang out with us. You can share your poetry. You can call in and read along. You can comment. Or you could hang out on the chat wall, and we post the links there for each poem that we share, and you can follow along there and write a comment, participate as much or as little as you'd like. Right now, we have had some technical difficulties in the studio for quite a bit, so I have a whole list of poems. Part of the topic tonight is for one that we had to postpone, and that topic was The Color Red. And then there are also poems for tonight that pay homage to Wales, which was, even though it's late, was a gift that I came up with to an anniversary gift, actually, for one of my board members, the one and only Sweet Pea, because whales are near and dear to her heart, and I wanted to find a way to show her some love, so we went with the topic of whales. So there'll be a little bit of red and a little bit of whales. And since there's so many poems, I'm just going to jump right in, and I am going to start with my big brother Hatter, who wrote that amazing song. Hey Hatter, welcome to the show.
I thought you forgot me. Thanks.
No, I let you in already, but I think when the show started, it must have kicked you on to the hold button, because when I looked, you were on hold, and I didn't put you there. So I guess sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But in the meantime, I also want to mention that while we were having those technical difficulties, we do have one episode that we have trapped in limbo, and that's an episode that was done by Linda, Liquid Damage, one of her open poetry shows. I've got another message again today that they still haven't figured out how to save the stuff in those episodes. So I guess we will figure out what to do. We'll give them a little more time until the next time.
Well, we redid that. We reread everything the next week.
No, we just took the four recording poems and added them to her open poetry show.
Just four of them? Oh. Really?
Yeah, I got a ton of poems, so I'll go over that with Linda, but what I was thinking is that we will just trickle some of each of them into her upcoming episodes so that they're not lost forever, and then the worst happens is if they actually get around to fixing that for us, they'll be on two different shows, but at least none of them will have been forgotten, because, you know, it's important to Linda that her followers get their work out there when they share with her. So with that being said, let me open up some of these lines, starting with Linda. Hi, Linda. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here.
Hi, Deb. Nice to be here.
I also have Stephen from A Poetic Slice of Life, the radio station that he and his wife run. And I know that she's not feeling well, so I'm sending out some get-well wishes to her. Hello, Stephen. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here.
Hello. Glad to be here.
And right behind Stephen is none other than Mr. David Prophet, the inventor. Is that the right word? I wonder. The creator, there you go, of the Dark Mother series. Hello, Dave Prophet. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here.
Yeah. Hi, Deb. I'm glad to be here, for sure. Hi, everybody.
Awesome. And right behind him is Mr. David Gent. I mean, yeah, Mr. Wayne Gent. Sorry, Wayne. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here.
Nice to meet you. Glad to be here.
And one more line at the moment would be the person I mentioned at the beginning of the show with a little bit of a tribute to her whales, and that would be my amazing board member, the one and only Sweet Pea. Hey, Sweet. Glad you're here.
Hello. Hello, everybody. How you doing?
Not
That's
too
sweet.
Bad at all. It's so good to see
good
everyone.
To
I missed you. It's been crazy between storms. That you want to hear the ironic thing. We were having a storm like every other night here, and it just kept on falling on Mondays and sometimes on Saturdays. Anyway, since they started having problems with the blog talk, there hasn't been a single storm. So that's just kind of weird, just saying. Maybe we're finally getting over them. And one last thing before we dive into all these poems. David and Linda, I sent you each a link to a contest, and I think that you two should talk and become a team, because I bet you could win I think it's $1,000 prize, and there has to be two people on the team, and you write, I believe you each write your own story, I'm not sure, but click on that link I sent you and do some reading, because I think that the two of you could do really well as our king and also queen of story poems, just saying. So I wanted to make sure that sometimes the messages,
I
know mine, get lost in my inbox.
I think what they're doing,
is they send you a link for the first verse, and then you alternate verses from the second verse to the 49th verse, and then they send you each an ending that you need to write an ending for. So it's like the second through 49th verses are alternated between us, and then the first and the 50th verse are written for us. We just have to follow the information. It's weird.
Well, I'm thinking that the two of you will figure it out, and I'll be keeping my fingers crossed that you show them what you got and win the big bucks. So see how that goes.
Yeah, it's $2,000 first place.
Yeah, so I figured that, you know, $1,000 a piece, that would be a great thing. So I really think that the two of you as a team could really nail it. So I'd be anxious to see if you give it a shot. All right, now.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead. Oh.
No, I was just saying I'd like to give it a try.
Cool. I really think the two of you should. All right, now, as I said a moment ago, Kay's not feeling well, so I have one of hers and two of Steven's that I'm going to get on the board so that he can go take care of his wife. And Steven, if you want to go ahead and start with hers, please, I'd appreciate it.
All right, this is for the red prompt called Gentle is the Frost Before the Breach of Nature by Kay. Mercantiles and papier-mâché, magnolia flowers on display. Splashing summer's laguna climbing roses nestled above planters of life. As vanilla strawberry hydrangeas wilt in rustic browns of bare fruits to earth, fleshed neath bathed turquoise as gold and cinnamon spice toast the field's back shadows. Rosebuds decorating ash, ruby slipper cloaks creek beds, whispering melancholia secrets. Driftwoods misting through greenery as beach days turn to amber's warmth and consignment of chill. Concede, picking the hands that want you is the brushing of time. Clarets in buckeye scarlets mulls the brine of roots and ache, while singing platitudes of cider mill browns in repose of high-minded ties of changing seasons. End poem.
Great read. Wow. You know, as vanilla strawberry hydrangeas wilt in rustic browns, the thought of the scent of a vanilla strawberry hydrangea is sort of overpowering, and it captured me for a moment. And I like how she paired the red art with that beautiful, beautiful hanging bush of strawberries. And I mean, they're all so perfect. So then when she jumps into those strawberries right at the very beginning, my mouth is watering and my senses are tickled from the thought of it. And she's got cinnamon spice and rosebuds. I mean, so many scents. It's nearly overwhelming because I would imagine, at least for me, anyone I've ever smelled was crossing my mind Stephen read each one, but as Kay mentioned each one, it took me on a journey. I mean, there were so many great scents all through it. And then the visuals, too. The buckeye scarlet mulls the brine of roots and ache. And there's an ache, a longing, the emotion in just that line is pretty potent. While singing platitudes of cider mill browns in repose of high-minded ties, I just think, I say it a lot, but it's just because it's true. There's nobody on the site that blends metaphors the way that Kay does, and she takes us on these journeys, and you can see it. Often you can smell it or nearly taste it. And this is definitely one of those that's a torture to the senses, because now I want to just put everybody on hold and go in and find some fruit in the freezer, because I know there's some strawberries in there. But, yeah, no, this came out. And I like that it like a nod to family and friends and nature all wrapped into one. So, yeah, my mouth's definitely watering. My, oh, my. All right, and what I'm going to do also on this one, because I have so many to try and fit in, I'm just going to – I will, of course, comment on all of them because I think that the host should always comment on them. And then I'll have the next reader comment. But since Stephen's going to read in a row for me, I'll have him comment for Kay, and then I'll pick one of you guys to comment on his poems as he reads. So, Stephen, if you would comment for your wife while I go and get your first poem, that would be great.
Yeah, I like this, too. There's definitely a lot to take in. And like you said, Kay really brings the metaphors in such a wonderful way. When you talk about, there's that one line about the ruby slippers that makes me think of like an ache for home is what I saw in there. But then there's also a lot of familiarity in this because the walks that we take, there's a lot of stuff in here, like the Buckeye Scarlets. There's Buckeye trees at the park that we walk in, and I'm always picking up Buckeyes off the ground while we're walking, and that just made me think of that. And the blooming flowers, because there's flowers that bloom all around the wooden stairs that take you from the top and down to the beach. So there's a lot of stuff that really makes me think of our walks in this, but also I also see maybe some fall changing over to winter as well, or summer changing to fall. It's really beautiful, right?
Look at that plant. You got to have one.
Yeah.
I know, right? It's one of the most beautiful strawberry plants I've ever seen, and it just makes you want one even more.
I didn't know they grew like that.
Oh, yeah, you can
wow.
buy the hanging one. You can just hang them on your front porch like a flower and then just pick them. Oh, I want to grab through that picture and grab one. Anyway, okay. Stephen, if you would read the one on the board, I would appreciate it.
All right, this is the one that I brought for the Red Show, and I apologize that it's a pre-write, but I've been so busy writing my books that I haven't really written a lot of poetry lately. And this is one that I wrote for one of our Ireland shows because it has to do with some Irish legends. And it's called Through Bull Rock to the Red Palace where dawn awaits without malice. Copper wind chimes sing in minor key, left of redwood drawbridge pulley. Echoing off the crimson stone, breeze does through the ramparts moan. Dead trees scratch at window panes, drummed upon by devil's rain. Constant march of sorry souls raked across the hellfire coals. As banshees keen upon their ways, the king inside the red keep stays, carrying those who breathe their last. Into the netherworld they have passed. Spectres fill castle hallways, don their monarch sits and prays, to let them pass the gate of bronze, into unfettered light of great beyond. For those who unready to die, shun the look from Banshee's eye, ever roam the scarlet corridors, trapped inside red maze of floors. End poem.
Wow, Stephen. Some pretty awesome visuals. Even sounds in yours, too. Copper wind chimes sing. I you could almost hear them banging against each other. The left of the redwood drawbridge pulley, echoing off the crimson stone breeze, does through the ramparts moan. Just the sounds and sights in the first stanza pulls you in. I could, like I said, I could hear the wind chimes, I could feel the breeze, and I could picture them hanging there next to that drawbridge. So great descriptions there. I like dead trees scratch at window panes, drummed upon by devil's rain. And, you know, you could hear that tree scratch against the window all day long, and you probably wouldn't even notice it amongst everything you're doing during the course of the day. But as soon as it gets dark, and then that same limb or branch scratches against a tree, all of a sudden it's a scary devil out there. I mean, it's crazy how the where you are and the circumstance and how you feel about something changes as soon as it gets dark at night.
Would you live in that house?
On that lighthouse? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I would.
You would?
That would be. Yeah, that's my dream location, is to win the lottery and buy and restore a lighthouse and live there. I mean, imagine
that's
how amazing it would
that's
be.
That's the beginning of every horror story ever. Women inherit a mansion.
Yeah, but it puts me right there at the ocean. I have the ocean awake me. I have the ocean to lull me to sleep.
You have to have a helicopter. You have to have a helicopter to get in and out of there.
Well, the helicopter could bring me stuff. Nobody said I was ever going to leave. But no, I love the scene that you set here. Even with the thought of the banshees and the devil's reign and everything else around it, I didn't care because, like I said, you put me in the middle there and surround me by ocean and that view, and I'm all in. Maybe we'll get an exorcist to come get rid of people like the Red Pallet or Don awaits without malice. I mean, you know, we can exorcise the devil and just take the joy that comes with that piece of ground. And besides, all of them aren't in that specific location. Some of them are on like a peninsula, so you can just drive out that way. This specific one is very isolated, which I guess it would depend on the part of your life. If you're young and you're still running out partying and that kind of stuff, you want better access. But if you just want to chill and write poetry and enjoy the world and the nature, sign me up. But off track there, Stephen, really great poem with amazing visuals and stuff throughout it. Like I said, minus the banshees and the scary parts, I'm in. Great share.
Thanks, Deb.
Hatter, you want to comment for Stephen?
Yeah, the dead tree scratching on the windows. There's a childhood memory of that still freaks me out to this day. Down in the Bay Area, it was always windy, and branches would hit the side of the window and freak me out. Anyway, great imagery. Where was that piece? Dead tree scratch on the window panes, drummed upon by devil's rain. Your rhyming is good, man. Get a little slide, and you gotta switch it up now and then. You know, have you seen that lighthouse? It's on that same kind of a rock, but it's got a huge green grassy meadow in the middle. I don't know where that is. You haven't seen it? Ah, that's fancy. Anyway, yeah, I would definitely live at a place like that.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, now, Stephen, before we dive into your next poem, how about if you do two things? Tell us what's coming up at a Poetic Slice, and give us a little bit of information about your books that are for sale.
All right. Coming up at a Poetic Slice of Life is tomorrow. We're going to do The Mortuary of Shadows. And because there are so many scary movies that Kay and I like to watch before Halloween, we usually start in August. So we've started to watch our barrage of horror flicks, and we thought we'd do a little homage to them. So Kay found a lot of really cool art and photos from different horror movies that you can write to. Those are the prompts. There's anything from Sleepaway Camp to what have we got, to The Burning, to Creepshow, and to one that I've been watching lately, twice I've actually watched in the last month, one called Bubba Hotep. And we're going to feature clips from the movie Bubba Hotep, where we're actually going to take you from the beginning to the end of that movie. So if you've never seen it and you want to see it, you might want to skip the show because it's going to spoil the hell out of it. But if you want to learn about the show, check it out. It's going to be fun.
What kind of horror show freaks Kay out the most? Like a Hitchcock?
She doesn't like the ones that are overly gory. That would be, and since most of the... Yeah, so since most of the newer ones are overly gory, we don't watch any of those. We hit the old 80s ones. The old 80s slashers, they weren't over the top. They were still fun to watch. But now it's all blood and guts, and it's just terrible. But that's 7 p.m. tomorrow. As for the books, I actually have too many out. No, I'm just kidding. I do have the Erie Ocean out, and it's prequel. The Erie Depths is the first one. Its prequel is the Erie Ocean. Those are both available for sale. Kay prompted me to submit a bunch of my short stories, so that was published in a book called What Lurks Behind the Eyelids. These are all available on Amazon.com or Goodreads.com or BarnesandNoble.com. You can check out the links on my All Poetry page. They're all right there to check it out. Yes, Sky's show is after hours. She is doing another King Arthur Thursday at 8 p.m. featuring the movie King Arthur from 2004. Character writes, quote writes, scene writes. Have fun and geek out with Sky, 8 p.m. Thursday evening. And then Friday, it's me and the Hat Man for the Man Cave. Come and join us at 10 p.m.? Is it 10 p.m. or 9 p.m.?
Deborah, which one is it? It should be 10.
9.
It should be 10. It's 9?
I thought it was 9.
Yeah, it's 9. 9 p.m. Eastern here at A Team of Voices. Come and visit us. We know things.
Yeah.
You know things, huh? I like that. All right, well, show us what you got with your whale poem, sir.
Well, I will first, I guess I will kind of apologize because what I wrote too, I was also watching Shark Week a lot, and I learned about two orcas named Port and Starboard who I actually wouldn't mind being removed from the earth because they aren't very nice. And this is called Port and Starboard. White death dermal denticles gritty with sand. Blood stains the beach from shark carcass on land. Seven gill liver removed, so surgical and pinpoint. Two orcas do slaughter to vanishing point. End poem.
Are these two that are attacking the boats too?
They're attacking sharks and just ripping their livers out and letting them bleed out. They're just eating the livers and then letting the sharks die.
Yeah.
Horrible.
They got a pod of like 20 attacking boats, tearing the keels off of boats.
That's sort of like the Japanese fishermen there cutting the fins off those sharks to make shark fin soup, and then they just let the shark die.
Yep.
They can't live without that dorsal fin.
That's what I was going to say. Stephen, it puts me in mind of when you went on your soapbox about that shark fin soup and what a disgusting display that is, because like David just mentioned, they can't swim without that fin, so they just sink to the bottom and they lay down there and slowly die, which is horrible. And then I didn't – that the shark fin part I knew when you – wrote of it, and I was glad to see you shine the light. This part, I had no idea, and it's just disgusting what we do. I mean, I know at some point whales were total survival for people, but they used everything from the blubber on through. They used it for fuel, they ate it. They didn't just kill for sport, and they definitely didn't just kill for a liver. I mean, I learned something with this
one.
Because I had no idea. What a sad, sad fact, truly.
Yeah, these two orcas have actually chased all the great whites away from South Africa because the great whites just scattered because these two orcas have been pulling this. It's just weird that whales would do that. I just don't. To me, what I found out.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought? I had no idea whatsoever.
Just to mention, you know, it's like the people that are the fishermen that do that. And we think of that as a terrible crime. It's their way of life and how they feed their families, and I'm not giving them a defense at all. I think it's terrible too, but it's like when we went into Afghanistan to burn the poppy fields. We took their source of living away from them. And the same thing with Greenpeace trying to do these Japanese trawlers. It's the sad thing, but they've got to they have very little thought of the life of the fish, the animals.
But this has nothing to do with humans. This problem has nothing to do with humans. Humans aren't doing anything. This has nothing to
well,
do
no,
with
no.
People ain't gotten...
We were comparing these two whales to how the humans did the shark fins. It just seemed like...
Right, I understand that. But going back to this poem, I'm just going back to this poem. This is something freaky.
No, that's what I was. It was like these two whales are acting with total disregard. You got to wonder, did they learn that from seeing what the humans do to them or to the other creatures?
That's what I say.
Yeah,
they're acting like humans. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just creepy to me.
Yeah, no, that's
the first time.
Totally, like I said, and I had no idea. And I assume that this is like a true story about this, like they were in the news or something.
To be so precise.
Somebody didn't just, so like,
right,
really,
yeah,
really.
No, they,
I think
they surgically
so cool.
pinpoint
I mean,
the
that.
Liver. It's crazy.
Yeah, the first time
no, someone was able to kill them.
I mean, this is like evolution as its craziness. These two can be so precise and surgically, like, boom, boom, boom. They're not,
yeah.
not tearing up the carcass. They're not tearing up anything. They're going after a liver on a shark, a very dangerous shark, and doing this. I just think that's fascinating, Steve. And I think that I agree. Not only that, I think these two should be captured and disposed of because they are hurting a whale population or a shark population that should not be touched. But somebody needs to capture these two and figure out what the hell is going on in these brains that they're able to do this. Is this an evolutionary thing? Is this something that's necessary? What is going on with the orcas?
They got the pod of about 20 or 30 of them that attack the boats. They tear the keels off the boats. And then you've got the seven marauding male lions that are terrorizing Africa, killing all the alpha males.
The orcas that are tearing the keels off the boats, they're just trying to protect the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Green pieces.
Yeah, no, it's just totally blows my mind, the story start to finish. And to educate us the way you did with four lines, Stephen, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yes,
I agree.
Absolutely. Totally. All right. Well, sweet, you're the next reader. So, if there was anything else that you wanted to say on Stephen before he,
I'm just wildly impressed. And I didn't even know it was one of your four lines, and you just started a rash of conversation. So, your four lines went into 20 minutes of wow. So, congratulations.
Thanks, sweetie.
Great comment. And Stephen, thank you for calling, and tell Kay that we hope she feels better.
Yeah.
And I'll see you at the mortuary. And my sweet, show us what you got.
Absolutely. Let's see. I have to say this is my very first auto rank, and I didn't even try. I didn't even realize it was only four words, but I did it without thinking. This is my first 10 four-word poem, or four-line poem, by the way. Didn't even know that. This is called Breach. The sound of our songs ring in monochrome melody. Ancient moons shine, no glass slipper wishes for the future. The great ocean creatures who breach the waters, watching the progression of the dying moon. And home.
The sounds of our songs ring in monochrome melodies. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful opening line. And then the nod to the glass slippers there is kind of really cool with which it wishes for the future. I think that there's a whole lot in these four lines. And I can't believe you just got a 4-line 10 so by accident. Talk about
showing
off.
That's not even thinking about it.
Yeah. Wow. The great ocean creatures who breach the waters, watching the progression of the dying lands. And you got to wonder, well, some of the stuff that those amazing mammals have seen might just drive them to surgically removing livers from other creatures. Or, who knows, I've seen videos where ship captains have slowed down and the whales have come over and the captains have reached in and picked the barnacles off the whales. So maybe they are trying to protect, because, I mean, there's always been shark attacks, but for some reason, with the change in the water temperatures and the change in locations, there's been a lot more lately, and maybe the whales are punishing them for picking on humans. I guess you could go in so many different directions just from Stephen's story. And then we come to the enchantment of the beautiful melodies in Sweet's 4 lines. I really think that this is gorgeous, Sweet. And your love for them shines in with those monochrome melodies that you put in there. And I have to point it out one more time. I really love that the glass slipper wishes for the future. I think that's a brilliant metaphor. Great share. And Stephen's still here, so let me let him comment before he goes and takes care of his wife. Stephen?
Well, yeah. First off, I have to say congrats on joining the 4-Line 10 Club. My first one was an accident as well. But I really love how this comes from the whale's point of view and how they're kind of watching us destroy ourselves as well as probably the world along with us. I thought that this is an awesome 4-liner, Sweet. Very well done.
Fantastic. And I am going to grab the... Okay, let me start with Linda, Wayne, Dave. Any of you guys in a hurry?
I'm not in a hurry. I'm just kind of nodding here, so if you think I'm on mute, I'm not. Just call my name.
Okay. And did somebody else start to say something?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm here to appear for as long as anybody.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. Then what I'm going to do, just in case, is I'm going to grab Linda. So, Linda, while I go find yours, you want to give Sweet a comment?
Yes, I would. This is beautiful, and the word that Deb used, gorgeous, fits it perfectly. It really does show your love for a creature that's really misunderstood. They're beautiful, they're loving, and they care for each other, and they care for other creatures in the ocean. And, yeah, if they're attacking sharks, they'll do that. If a person is in the water and sharks are coming for it, dolphins and orcas will come to their rescue. And now it's changing a little bit. The orcas are getting a little bit more aggressive. And it's nobody's fault. I mean, they're picking up behavior because they do learn behavior from us. And for you to be able to show their beauty in 4 lines is a magnificent tribute to them and to you, Sweet. It's just awesome. So thank you for sharing this beautiful piece of poetry.
Thank you.
Awesome comment. And before you read, go ahead, Sweet.
I was just going to say, first off, I want to apologize to everybody. I haven't done a lot of shows. I haven't commented on a lot. I haven't written a lot. I did severely burn my hands, and everybody that's coming to my show and writing my show, I really, really appreciate it. I know I've been bowing out a lot, and I really do apologize for that. It's not at my choice, but I do have second and third degree burns. I burned my fingers off. I'm almost 12 old. So please forgive me. I really apologize for not being around as much as or have been. I've got a few more weeks of this still going on, but thank you, everybody, for all the sweet and wonderful things you have sent me.
No need to apologize, sweet. We're just glad that you're healing, but hate that you're in pain. Speaking of, though, do you think you'll be doing a show this week? And if so, do you want to push it, or are you going to wait until the following week?
I will be doing my show this week. It may take me a little slower to do it. I am henpecking on the computer, so just bear with me, but I will definitely be doing my show this week.
And that is
so,
on the continuing
so,
the stories?
Yeah, it's on the continuing. Yeah, tell me the rest of my story. I love it. Please pick one of the two poems and pick either before and after or during. I would love to hear what you have to say about either of the characters in my poem. So,
yeah, I'm actually excited to bring you my continuation, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
I bet. Yeah, no, I thought it was a great idea. And I'm thinking that it'll be cool to see where people take them.
Yeah, what was the prompt? Awesome. Reminding us?
Sweet
it's
has two poems
story.
On the board. Go ahead, Sweet.
I have two poems on the board that people have asked me very often. Are you going to write another poem? Are you going to add to that poem? Are you going to tell me more about that character? And I kind of got sick of being told to write, so I put these two poems up and asked everybody, can you write more about this person or write me a story? Either write me something about the character before the incident or after the incident or something that happened during my poem, in the scene or anything. Just write more of the story. So read both the poems, pick which one you like, and write the rest of the story. So have fun with that.
Okay.
Awesome. And Hatter, do you want to mention Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday is the tribute to George Harrison, Concert for George. It's one of the most outstanding gathering of rock musicians. And we'll go over who's there. Won't be able to see it, but that's good music. Like I said, from Eric Clapton to Klaus Voormann to Ringo Starr to Paul McCartney and everybody in between, Jeff Lynne, Tom Petty. It'll be fun. Tribute to
awesome.
Dick Harrison.
Awesome. And then, Linda, before you read, your next one's September 8th. You want to shout out for that one?
Well, actually, we have October 13th and 20th in October, and then in November.
Will you not be here for September?
September. Sorry. Yeah, the 8th and the 5th, I will be here. Absolutely.
Okay.
Joined by my friend Carmine and hopefully my friend Hatter. Have a lot of fun, tell some jokes, and get through the night having fun. So come join us. It's like fun.
Sounds like a plan. And then, Linda, your poem is from the red prompt, and it's on the board, ready to go.
Okay, mine also started out to be four lines. Once upon a time, a long time ago, there lived a young maiden named Jade. She lived with her folks in a castle of stone, one that her father had made. Now Jade was so lovely that when she walked by, the flowers would giggle and say, "Oh my gosh, she's a gift sent from heaven above to brighten up all of our days." Jade liked to go to the garden each day and sit by the grass by the pond, where she'd make daisy chains and the birds would all plead, "Jade, please won't you sing us a song?" With anticipation, the creatures all waited for all in the garden to hush. Then Jade would sing out with all of her heart, and the creatures would quiver and blush. Then Jade would lay back in the shade of the trees and think about her lovely life and wish that a prince would find her someday and make her his bonny young wife. It happened one day that a prince rode on by and heard Jade singing a song, and he walked up to her and softly he said, "Do you mind if I sing along?" It was love at first sight for Jade and the prince. They looked into each other's eyes, and just at that moment, each other knew a love that would last all their lives. And so it became that the prince and Miss Jade got married as soon as they could, in front of their folks and the people of town in a garden that grew near the woods. They started their lives simple and free and lived like they didn't have a care. And everyone said when asked about them, "Gosh, what a beautiful pair." To show his love to Jade, so true, he picked a single rose, red as crimson every day to show his love did grow. Then after 5 years, his father, the king, told the prince he must go to war. So he gave to Jade her last red rose, and upon the rose he swore, "I will return in one full year, and our love will start a fire." He kissed her gently on her lips and said, "You are my one desire." But then the year came to pass, and Neri was her love. She got on her knees and folded her hands and prayed to her God up above. Now 10 years hence, the prince returned. Thoughts of Jade consumed his mind. But alas, she laid frozen on the snow. Beside her he did find a single rose, crimson red, laid beside her in her death, with these words carved in snow, "Till my last breath," in poem.
Now, see, Linda, this is exactly why I sent that link to you and Dave, because when you tell a story poem, you tell a complete story, and you pull us in, and we get vested in the outcome. Okay, for starters, the fact that it starts once upon a time, long ago, a young maiden named Jade, I like that it sets us up for a fairy tale, which feels like a contrast to that hand coming out of the ground there. So I'm like, And then, let me see. Jade liked to go to the garden each day and sit in the grass by the pond, where she'd make daisy chains and the birds would all plead, "Jade, please, won't you sing us a song?" And it's like the thought of usually it's the other way around. It's the birds singing. You're sitting in nature and the birds are serenading you. And I like that in this case they came to her to ask for a song. I thought that was a beautiful touch. Gosh, so many. It was love at first sight for Jade and the prince. They looked into each other's eyes, and just at that moment, each other knew a love that would last all their lives. So looking at the picture, you don't know. Like, I know my sweet might have had that tan keep coming up and then eat the girl. So to take that picture and just take us into this love with the prince, it was really, really cool. And to show his love to Jade so true, he picked a single rose, red and crimson every day to show his love did grow. I mean, just little bits all through it that just totally enchanted. And then where they started their lives simple and free and lived like they didn't have a care. And everyone said when asked of them, "Gosh, what a beautiful pair." And then towards the end there, "But then a year came to pass and Neri was her love. So she got on her knees and folded her hands and prayed to her God above. Now 10 years hence, the prince returned." So, like, the thought of him being gone in those 10 years are like really sad. But she laid frozen in the snow beside that. I mean, then we get more into the sadder part. So, like I said, this is just a total trip, a total story all the way through. And then the ending, a single rose, crimson red, lay beside her in her death with these words carved in the snow, "Till my last breath." And it's like, wow. Talk about waiting for the love that didn't come back. I mean, I'm just totally, and that part brings us all the way back to the art and that rose there and that hand and her just there in the cold. And you just look at her bare skin, her shoulders, and there's snow all around it. Just there's just such a coldness that your wording brings. So it totally brought that art to life from beginning to end. What a story. Wow.
Thank you, Deb.
Impressive as always, Linda. My, oh, my. All right, Wayne, I'm going to have you, I'm going to play the red one next. So do you want to comment for Linda?
Sure. I mean, I kind of, while she's reading it, it's a wonderful job of a rhyme and things. So I wrote a little parody about it to see if I can make it make sense of it. So I said, Jade in red crimson laid, while in the snow the prince weighed. And a couple cool couple they made as they prayed before Jade went away. So that's a parody. Anyway, it's a wonderful poem you have here and a great rhyme and a great storyline. I loved always hearing. And you did a good job.
Thank you very much. You know, this is actually an excerpt from my book with the same title, Jade, a fairy tale story. It's a little bit changed, but the first few verses are pretty much straight from the book. So if you're interested, when it's published, you can read what really happens.
Yeah, I'd like to know when you get published. Let me know.
Wow. That's an incredible story. All right, Mr. Gent. I will push play. Does everyone see Wayne's link on the board? Wayne, I think it would be really cool if while we're listening to your audio, if you put your painting on there, because I really think that you nailed this art when you painted it yourself.
I'll put it on
the topic
wall.
Okay.
Sure will.
Awesome.
Can I ask him?
Say that again, Hatter.
Can I ask him? Hey, Wayne.
Question. Yes.
Do you have a picture of Elvis and Phelps painting on above your couch?
I should have, but I don't.
I know. I knew it. Should have. I saw your painting. I go, I bet he's got a painting of Elvis.
I should have, but I have never got around to painting him. If I do, I will put above the couch on.
Cool. Okay,
wow.
Sorry.
All right, well, while we listen to his audio, he's going to find us the painting he made of this art that you see in his poem. So I am going to push Wayne Red. Here we go.
This is called Encounter with Satan. Walking through the forest on a dark, dreary night, looked up ahead and saw a strange-looking light. It was bright red and had an evil glow. What could it be? I just didn't know. As it got closer, it seemed to be following me. Then it disappeared behind the large oak tree. Everything was dark, but there was a sound. It was a hiss with a laugh coming from beneath the ground. I was getting scared and stood still, confused. Out of the ground came a red figure that seemed the muse. It laughed with fire coming out of eyes and ears. It started backing up as my eyes filled with tears. I said, "Who are you and what do you want from me?" Loudly replied, "I'm taking your soul as you so soon will see." It was the devil, Satan himself, with yellow glowing eyes. This came to me as a complete surprise. "Please don't take my soul. I have a life to live. Is there anything else I could possibly give?" Satan stood up and the crimson hue filled the sky. Lightning shot out of his chest and circled by. I thought to myself, this is not how I want to die. I fell to my knees and asked all God Almighty why. Then the sky opened up with a thunderous sound. Contentment surrounded me as I laid on the ground. Air became sweet
The red sky turned to a marshmallow white. An angel appeared. He covered me with a wing very tight. The devil let out a hiss as the angel took flight. It was God that saved me from his terrible blight. Every day I seek out God to talk, and down the road of righteousness is where I walk. In.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. Where do I start?
Devil went down to Georgia.
Well, for one thing, I like the title, Encounter with Satan. So we know where we're headed, that's for sure. And I'm sorry, from the beginning there, walking through the forest on a dark and dreary night, looked up ahead and saw a strange-looking light. It was bright red, had an evil glow. What it could be, I just didn't know. And I'm thinking, time to turn around and run like hell. Just saying. But wow, as I got closer, just the second stanza there, shows a kind of bravery that I don't have, because I would not have got closer. Again, I would have turned and ran. But very cool. And it seemed to be following me. Then it disappeared behind a large oak tree. Now everything was dark, but there was a sound. Was a hiss with a laugh coming from beneath the ground. I'm like, oh, my word. How? And you're still not running, Wayne. You keep going. You're not, I mean, whoa. Okay, down further. Please don't take my soul. I have a life to live. Is there anything else I could possibly give? Satan stood up as a crimson hue filled the sky. Lightning shot out of his chest and circled by. I'm like, oh, my God. I mean, the graphic imagery through here is really scary, and thought to myself, that's not how I want to die. Fell to my knees and asked God Almighty, why? I'm like, oh, no. Then the sky opened up with the thundered sound. Contentment surrounded me, and I laid on the ground. Air became sweet, and red sky turned to marshmallow white. An angel appeared and covered me in her wings very light. I love how you took it from scary and dark and wanting to run to the beautiful images that came from the wings, from the devil's hiss leaves as God saved you from that terrible plight. I think that is so, so cool. And another example of like a full circle, a full story in a poem. I think you nailed this picture. I think that you totally brought it to life. And pardon the pun, in full living color. I mean, wow, Wayne, very impressive. And did you find the?
I don't know how to post it. Where do I post it at? How do I post it? I'm not sure how to post it anywhere.
Wait, you know what? Just put the link on the board if that's easier. Do you know how to do that?
I can put it in a journal up around.
It's darker.
Yeah,
darker if you,
just,
Satan.
I don't know how to post it.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me go over to your wall and grab it, because they have to see Wayne.
Hey, Wayne.
On your page. Now I will find it. Wow, you've done a lot. I forgot that how long we've been postponing here. I'm still scrolling, trying to find it. But it's worth it, because I want them to see.
Hey, Wayne.
Yes.
In that stanza, I said, "Who are you, and what do you want from me?" Loudly replied, "I'm taking your soul, as you will soon see." It was the devil. Satan is with an A. You call him Satan right there.
Oh, okay. Satan. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
You're right.
It's got a better effect if it's, not Satan. Not Satan. Nice and dark.
Is it on your profile page, Wayne? Because I can't. I found this poem, but I'm not finding the one that you drew.
Let me see.
Did you delete
it? You sent it to me, didn't you? Do I have it? Would I have it? Did you
no,
send it
No, but
to
you
me?
Know what? I think, okay, wait a minute. Let me come over here, because I think he added it to the actual topic wall.
I have
I give it to you as a journal. Please.
Okay, I get it. All right, let me go over here because you sent it directly to me, so that's probably the easiest way to find it. Okay, that was Kiss. Before then, dun, 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 I can't believe I can't find this. But, I mean, he painted a rendering of that art, and I was blown away by the devil. Here we go. I think I found it. I did. All right, let me grab it right now. And I'm on my way to the chat wall with it as we speak so you guys can see it and hit that.
I posted my journal. I don't know how to post a picture.
There you go.
I don't know how to do that.
That's not a problem. I'll have to show you sometime. But if you guys look at the picture in the poem he just read, and then other than the fact that his horns are lighter in Wayne's than in the actual art, it's like spot on.
I took a terrible photo. I'm not very good at taking pictures. So that's a terrible, blurry picture of it. But you feel better than in your life.
Yeah, I probably should have tried to shrink it. But still, I mean, wow, Wayne. Really cool.
The same thing. You know, he's an evil person. He's an evil spirit.
For sure. All right, well, I'm going to grab your poem, David. So do you want to comment for Wayne?
Yeah, I really like this, Wayne. This is one of my favorites that you've done. It's really, really interesting, and I like the way you set the storyline up in it. It pulled me right into it, and it's really cool the way you did it. Good job.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate the comment.
You're welcome.
And yours is on the board.
Okay. Well, I saw this picture, and I decided to incorporate it into a venue that I've done before, only this time it was sharks, the last time it was sharks, and this time it's with gray whales. And so this is called Grays versus Grays. And it sounds like this. Before it happened one fine day, on board the sloop Sagittarius was I, whale watching outside the bay, a huge gathering of grays we were witness to see, seafoam sprays in aquamarines, their huge heads heaven bent, all too numerous to count, equal to the stars in Sagittarius tantamount. Then I smelled cotton candy and gunpowder, its breeze slipping round the huge spinnaker. Like a vision, she floated in front of the bowsprit. My shipmate stood roundabout, spellbound, her sub-octave red-shifted voice causing the sea to boil under our boat. David, my man, and friends of his, ye shall witness such sights to behold. Under the sea ye shall be, the gray whales, the grays, and me. We found ourselves inside a giant titanium bubble, an iridium film glistening on its exterior walls. The grays swam round us, followed by great whites, 25 feet in length, killer whales, perpetual smiles, interspersed in their tuxedo blacks and seafoam whites. We could hear them talking. The Dark Mother spoke to me, saying, David, I shall translate for you. And we heard them talking, and they were distressed, angry. Grays across the universe had come once again, torturing sea life for reasons known only to themselves. A huge bubble began rising up, holding a million gallons of the sea and us, you see. We flew towards a distant horizon where the ocean did not fall off the edge of the earth. We came to an upwelling of the sea. We plunged back into its depths. Fathoms below the surface we were, it was when we saw it, a huge round ship, ugly in its functions, coarse in its execution, built by beings who knew no better of Earth's heart nor her geometries. Grays with their huge net of Mother Earth's sea life held captive, dead fish upon the seafloor, products of soulless experimentation. The Dark Mother loosed the whales and sharks from our bubble. The whales took their ship apart, and the sharks ate the grays. A foul green ichor sank to the seafloor, their large black eyes wide with alien terror once again. Will they ever learn? End poem.
Well, that was really cool. I like how you took the, well, okay, if I understood it right, she encapsulated them and pulled them up away from what was being done by the aliens. And I think that, for one, how cool would it be if she could do that, like see stuff like this happening and then just encapsulate them in a bubble, and that would be really awesome. And then to have her put them in there and or to release them, and they attack the ship, like sort of a payback type of thing. You just got to leave them alone. And the details and stuff were pretty vivid, down to the gunpowder and candy, cotton candy scent, which is her trademark too. But I like how you found a way to bring her into the story of the whales, and how you she lifted them and put them in the right spot where they could attack. And it's sort of like leads you to the ending there with the question, will they ever learn? I don't think any of us will ever learn, because we just keep doing this stupid stuff over and over again. And how many species do we have to lose before we take a little more care, spend a little more time educating ourselves, not do so much for sport or just for the almighty dollar? You know what I mean? It just feels like, I don't know, mm-hmm. like don't. We never learn. Nothing's ever more important than that buck, and that's a sad thing to me. So I like how, hopefully I'm understanding this right, I like how the Dark Mother was an advocate for these whales, and I think that you did a brilliant job. Wow.
Thank you.
And let's see here. Okay, I'm putting on Tony's SoundCloud next, and since he's not here to comment, Linda, will you comment for David, please?
Yeah, well, David, you write a complete story as well. I mean, and your storyline couldn't have been more, you know, fantastic. Yeah, I do believe that aliens would come down and help the wildlife that was being abused. Absolutely. And your wording and your use of the Dark Mother again here in a different way is imaginable, you know. I can totally get it. So I think you did a really strong job on this. The imagery was like powerful and sweet at the same time. So yeah, you're just spot on with the details of your story. So thanks for sharing it with us. What a job.
Oh, thank you, Linda.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
Yeah, the other stories I've done about this have been the aliens, you know, doing this sort of stuff to the sea life, you know, experimentation and that sort of stuff. And the times before, the great whites took care of that, and now the gray whales did. Well, with a little help from their friends.
Okay, now, great share. If you guys would click on the link on the board, I will push the video or the audio that Titus made for us.
Love pulling at the heartstrings. from the ox blood on the floor, she'll call it home, a rose by any name. While this is a righteous claim, to speak of time, then a rust evolves to have combed the innocence of youth, yet a radish just the same. It is not for trying, she'll find that lobster in its pot. As ravenous a man becomes, his conscience keeps the lid on what will hold the limelight. He'll be sought to define a papaya while his pomegranate sleeps. Ripening by far does the lollipop to melting hearts beckon for so long. Keeping my mind, it'll find in it so little saffron. What became of these very fine arts? Paprika will excel to extirpate her as a nympholette. What is to be or not to be, it will suggest for now. Time is held for that matter, like a rich red merlot. It would suffice to capture a strawberry somehow, to taste just as sweet, an absent dream will borrow. She is at best a sugar plum fairy, not the last straw a persimmon could take the place, to take courage from the not-so-red pursuits, as well as either or, it may as well be topaz, to dress love up in forage. Love has ripened whilst the tomato cannot remain like the red wood. It will enable time and distance. Neither can a ruby compare the worth of such pain to reach in to pull the heart out of one's existence.
Well, I think for one, the background music sort of set a tone there. And I like... Like, look at the love pulling on the heartstrings, and you look at the picture, and it's a gorgeous piece of art with the red-winged person. And I like how there's stuff in here, like, where did that lollipop go? I'm really struck by that. Where the lollipop? That's where I wanted to start. Don't you love how you can't find something when you're... I'm going to start having to highlight it. Okay, here we go. Ripening by far does the lollipop to melting hearts beckon for so long. Keeping my mind, I'll find inept so little saffron. What becomes of these very fine arts? Paprika will excel. Backs further too. There it is. It is not for trying, she'll find that lobster in its spot. As ravenous as man becomes, his conscience keeps the lid on what will hold the limelight. He'll be sought to define a papaya while his pomegranate sleeps. I like to play words with the lobster and the papaya and the pomegranate because they're bold red colors that describe the reds, but they also bring extra meaning to some of the stanzas. And I like, I think it's the second to the last one. She is at best a sugar plum fairy, not the last straw. A persimmon could take the place to take courage from the not-so-red pursuits, as well as either or. It may as well be topaz to dress love up in forage. I like the scene he set. I like, like I said, the colors. Love has ripened whilst the tomato cannot remain. And ripen, usually you're waiting for, you know, you get some tomatoes at the store and you sit them on the windowsill and you wait for them to ripen. So the fact that he used ripen with the tomato, it's really, really a clever use of all the red colors and tones throughout this. And like I said at the beginning, there was something in the slow tempo in the music that he put in the background. You turn around and you take it and you put it all together, and it's another total package. And if I go up to the top, right under where his recording is, a butcher in Dead Headdom would leave an animal head where it was slaughtered. I take it like a metaphor in a distinct which resorted its violence. But there's just something to me so sad about the thought of, I mean, I'm pretty sure that when if I was going to the butcher's to buy some meat, I might be deterred from buying that meat if when I got there I saw the head. So there was some emotions that got me while I was reading this too. So I liked the way he played with the red colors throughout, from that ox blood all the way through to the lollipop. And she is at best a sugar plum fairy, which she does look like in that picture. So this was very cool. And back to the title, Love Pulling Heartstrings. And he did. Like I said, I'm still, just from the what would you call that, a preface, with the animal head, it's really got me. But yeah, and it's always such a joy to listen to him read. So fantastic work. Let me see here. How about I get a comment from David?
Deborah, did you say me?
Yes, please.
I wasn't here when the poem was read. I've been outside messing around with my dog. He's freaking out a little bit, so I missed that. I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to take a pass on the comment.
Oh no, no problem. Wayne, can you comment for Titus?
Yes, I can. I said this poem has wonderful metaphors in it. The poem has amazing fruits and colors throughout the poem, and the lines are magical. I like the lines. It would suffice to capture a strawberry somehow to taste just as sweet as absence dream would borrow. His wording is just simply amazing. His poem's all the way through. He did a great job with it, and the sale coverage was good. He's top level again. Great job, Titus.
Excellent comment. And Linda, I was wondering if I put Angel's poem on the board, would you mind reading for her?
Sure.
And hers is for the red prompt. And I'll have it there as soon as I find it. There it is. I had to pop over and I saw a comment that was made on somebody's poem and I had to make a little comment back to that person. Anyway, so there you go, please.
Got it. Oops. Something's in the way here. Come on. I don't know what just happened. Okay. Oh, Lord. I don't know what's happening.
Do you not see it on the chat wall?
No, I saw it, and then another page came up. Okay. Let me get it there. Okay. Turn black. Is it called His Dariana?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I got
Dariana.
It. Dariana. Okay, by Heavenly Angel. Dariana loves mystical, vibacious, nymphian, vehemently prancing, dancing, and singing, poured out from the vestige of his memories as a fine rose. He lives vicariously in the past, holding on to a dream that never materialized, remembering his Dariana in shades of silk and scarlet. In poem.
Thank you for reading. I like that the picture that it's like her coming from that wand. His Dariana, I think that's a really pretty title. Vehemently prancing, dancing, and singing poured out from the vestige of his memories as a fine rosé. There's something about that, poured out from the vestige of his memories. What a brilliant, brilliant line. The ending there, remembering his Dariana in shades of silken scarlet. I thought this was a really pretty brevity. And when I added this one to the choices, I wasn't sure where someone would go, you know, because you could think maybe Elton John might have played in your mind with the Tiny Dancer or something like that. But then she jumps in with, like I say, with the vestige of his memories, and like he was pouring himself a glass of rosé, and it just, she started dancing in his memory. And I just think that it's just, what, 4-8 lines, and I think that it is a very, very, very awesome brevity, and that it brought the art to life, for sure. Great brevity, Angel. Thank you so much. David, what did you think?
Well, I thought this was beautiful. I really like this one line here. It says, the one that you mentioned, poured out from the vestige of his memories as a fine rosé. You know, we all have these memories that we cherish, and we carry them around, and they eventually, some of them eventually fade out so that they're not nearly as vivid, but we still consider them just like a fine wine, I would say. You know, we taste them every now and then periodically, and the whole poem was very, very nicely handled, the way she wrote it. She's a real fine poetess, and I've always liked the way she handles things. I like the last two lines in the second stanza. It says, remembering his Dariana in shades of silk and scarlet. That's a really colorful and descriptive term, or I don't know if you'd call it a metaphor or not, maybe, but I thought it was a beautiful poem. It really was. It was gorgeous.
Awesome comment. And before I have Hatter read, Linda, because you read, did you want to give it a quick comment?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. It's a beautiful brevity, and I there's really not much I can add. He poured out from the vestige of his memories as a fine rosé. What a beautiful way to remember somebody, you know. We often compare women with fine wines, and this is a good way to show it in his memory. But the poetic language in this is absolutely beautiful, and yeah, I love Heavenly Angel stuff. She's a fine writer, and this is a very beautiful piece. Thank you, Angel, for sharing it.
Awesome comment. And Hatter, yours is on the board for your red poem, so will you read for us? Hatter, are you muted?
Yes, I am. I'll start over. Draining the red from the moon. Draining the red from a blood-soaked moon, turning dark gray, breathing the fumes, thinking of things lost and found, knowing it bleeds without making a sound. What if it's all what it claims to be, changing the ocean to a blood-red sea, teaching the day to inherit the dark, kneeling to pray it won't fall apart, feeling the wind fall from the shelf, forgiving the sins from within itself, calling by name the clearly insane, making it harder to hide, tying the sun as it comes undone, washing it out with the tide. Remember the red is what they said. Don't give it away too soon. Knowing what's lost at any cost, draining the red from a blood-soaked moon.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Mike, yes, to be muted. I like the title, Draining the Red from the Moon. And it really does look like that's what's happening in that art. So that was pretty clever. In the middle there, teaching the day to inherit the dark, kneeling to pray it won't fall apart, feeling the wind fall from the shell, forgiving the sins from within itself. There's something about that. Like, if we had the power to forgive the sins inside ourselves, well, we do, because that one's, I guess, it can go all kinds of ways, but to me, you know how we are often our worst critics when we write a poem? Well, sometimes we're the worst at holding things over our own heads, and then I think one of the hardest things to do, depending on the circumstances, to forgive yourself for something. Like, you might find it easier to forgive the guy next to you than yourself. So to be able to forgive yourself for what's within is a pretty powerful thought. And remember the red is what they said. Don't give it away too soon. Knowing what's lost at any cost, draining the red from the blood-soaked moon. So, like, it came full circle from the beginning line to the last line. And it's, I don't know, there's just a potentness to the thought of, for one, like I said, forgiving that sin, but for two, draining it, like, whoa. So I like where you took this. And you know what? You had said, I think it was yesterday or the day before, for a while there I was feeling really creative and I was on a roll, and then I'm realizing that this is from August 2nd, and at that time you were belting them out, and this is one of those. So it came out really great, Hatter. And I noticed that when you were finished, you got sort of an ovation there. So that's got to be pretty cool. But, Dave, what do you think of this one?
What's that?
You want to comment for Hatter?
Yeah, I do. I really like this. Of course, I like all of Hatter's stuff. I don't think I've ever read anything that he's written that I didn't like, but The rhyme and meter is, of course, great. And I like the draining the red from the moon. I have seen two or three blood moons up here in Oregon. And where I live, there's hardly any residual light. So the sky just pops when you go outside. I remember the first time I walked outside right after I moved up here, I looked up at the sky and it was so bright it startled me, and I went, wow. And this poem, I know there's other meanings to it, but this is kind of the way it hit me. And I just, I was amazed at the wording that you used in this and how the storyline went. I think it was really good, Hatter. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, Dave.
You're welcome.
Ta-da.
What happened to Deb?
And Friday we have a man cave.
Well, I'll comment.
I don't know what happened to Deb. Maybe we just swapped her with me.
I bet you ran out. I bet she's calling back in.
Hi there.
Hey, P. You're in Adelaide?
I am in Adelaide, yes. The pocket city of all pocket cities. It's Got it's like a million people, very small, and
a lot of churches,
it's like 15 minutes. A lot of churches, Hannah. Yes, a lot of churches. Yeah. So,
wow.
And it's an interesting city because it's basically a city, and then on all four sides there's parkland. And so, in order to get to the city, you've got to go through parkland, which is quite nice actually. And it's not English parkland; it's Australian parkland with gum trees and snakes and all the fun
wow.
stuff.
Wow, that's cool.
So you can tell which one is which.
Hi, Deb.
Sorry about that. I was saying something to my son, and I didn't realize that I didn't hit mute. Apologize. But no, I thought it was pretty freaky to look up and see the car and see the steering wheel. But I would imagine that that's the same thing that happens to you when you visit the U.S. and you get in and the steering wheel
is
on the wrong.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, and I get in the left-hand side, and it never, ever makes sense, to be honest. So, anyway, it's a strange thing. It's just what you're used to, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Once you get something set in your mind, it's just like it just seems so wrong to see that steering wheel over
yeah.
there. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's my
well,
that's
I,
the shotgun I, seat. That's not where you drive from. So it just seems
no,
bizarre.
No. That's right. And I said to Hatter the thing to do here, which what I would do in America, you look both ways before you cross the road. That way you can't go wrong.
Oh yeah, well I do that anyway. But I would hope
yeah.
that I don't find myself trying to drift back to like to the right lane, or to the wrong lane because the steering wheel was on the wrong. I don't know. It just, I suppose once you gave it a try, out of traffic, it was something that you could
yeah,
get used to. But it just seems cool and bizarre.
Yeah.
I was getting used
but
to it. Being a pedestrian, I was ready to drive on the wrong side of the road.
There you go, Steve. There you go. Hatter was confident. I've actually scored here. I've got the upgrade. I've got the boardroom in my room.
What's in your room?
A boardroom table and chairs.
Oh, wow.
I've got a separate boardroom. Yeah.
What a big room it must be.
Sweet. Upgrade. Anyway, it's got a separate bedroom and all. Separate lounge. It's like a little house.
How cool. That's a,
anyway.
A
now, fact, is this the red show plus the blue show plus the purple show? Or whatever
this is actually red and or whale, and I'm pretty sure you did the red.
Okay.
I know you were you got way ahead
red.
Of yourself, and I think I want to say that blue is
red.
Next week. I'm double checking real quick. But I remember that you were on a roll and that you were ahead on the blue.
Yep.
And yes, blue
yep.
is next Monday. But I know that
okay.
somewhere in there you have a red palm.
I have put the red palm on the board, Deb.
Awesome.
I put the
well,
red
so
palm on the
got...
board. My apologies because it includes my art and not people's other than me. So it's got a little picture from me. This is... Blood, it gathers. I quite like this poem, by the way. But this is Blood, it gathers. And it goes a little bit like this. Blood drips from the rivers, off of the lands, drains pities, fears, pains and interruption. Heavens, they soak moons and star bands, sky dripping crimson, rip bold and disruption. Gathered the weaknesses of many people, yet that petrichor of loss and damage spun. Can always trace like a bullet off a steeple by the two hands and decisions of just one. To the false grandiosities of those that lead, yet we elected them to represent our views and failings well known as detritus we weed. Blood it gathers in their words on the news. Upon bold colours draining from their faces off the skiting and posing from their bowers, drips off lids of their hats to their shoelaces. Drains towards fields, the shining ruby flowers, end poem.
Oh, I see why you like it. It has a lot of beautiful pieces all through it, the visuals. And the blood it gathers, you know, there's something in the art with the different colors, and it looks like what would that be? Like, oh, it brought something to my mind, but I can't quite place, like, a shot that I've seen in science pictures where it's like a blown up platelet or something like that, but all the red tones and stuff in it. So it does, it's like a gathering there in the picture. And even though I have a feeling that this is like maybe that red dandelion or something, I'm seeing it, like I said, as from a science book showing a blood under a microscope, which is kind of cool. But I like gathered in the weakness of many people, yet that petrichor of loss and damage spun can always trace like by the two hands and the decision of just one. That stanza right there is pretty powerful. And then I glance back at the art from that, and it's like that center there could be a bullet hole. So just your painting can take us in a whole bunch of different directions. And then your words do too, false grandiosities, blood it gathers in their words, on the news, upon bold colors draining from their faces. So I like how you pulled the blood through the poem down to the you know, you turn white because all the blood drained away, and drips off the lids and their hats to their shoelaces. So the hats to shoelaces is a really cool way to saying like head to toe type of thing. So I think that there's messages in these lines, but that the metaphors and stuff are very cool. And then, of course, the rhyme and flow and cadence was dead on. So I think this was an awesome share. And just so you know, I had like 5 million poems on the board, and we have like 20 all minutes right. left, and I have 8 more to go. So I'm just doing a comment, and then I'm having one other comment.
Perfect.
And since I am going to play a Gerald video audio next, and he is not here, I was hoping that maybe Linda could comment for AP.
Yeah, of course. Is this one of your paintings, AP?
Yes, it is, Linda. Yes.
Wow. Let me tell you, the composition of this is fantastic. It looks almost like a palette knife piece work. I don't know what
layered.
It is, but
yeah.
It's very beautiful, and yeah, I like what Deb said about the bullet hole, and having a thought of something bad and disruptive come in the beginning, and then go through the poem, which it is very well written, by the way, and its imagery is really, really, I mean, just top notch. But it kind of goes through the poem with the blood and the bullet till the end, you know, upon blood colors draining from their faces of the skidding and posing with their bowers, drip off lids of their hats to the shoelaces, drains towards fields by shining ruby flowers. Just an excellent verse. It just shows, AP, what a really good writer you are, and how you can take your own art and write to it and come up with something cohesive and beautiful. You know, it's a beautiful piece. And I loved it. I loved the picture. I'd like to have that hanging on my wall. I have a young artist who does work like that I've bought in about 7 of her paintings I have hanging on my wall. And that one looked, really cool. And I wanted to tell you, you know, the board table that's in your room, my father specialized in boardroom tables. He did Chase Manhattan's boardroom. Yeah, he charges $1,000 a linear foot, and he did theirs. It was 27 feet, and it cost him $28,000 for the table.
Nice.
But
wow.
Yeah, he was a master craftsman, one of the top 10 in the world. An excellent craftsman when it came to furniture. I have several pieces of his in my home that, you know, everybody wants to get their hands on, but it's really cool. But I just thought I'd throw that in. If I had a boardroom table, I'd sell it to you.
Thank you. No, well, thank you.
Yeah.
And I have to say, before I left for Adelaide, I got my Jordan Mailata jersey, and my Jordan Mailata jersey made its way to Adelaide so I can wear it for the draft.
Cool.
Heard you
too
couldn't
cool.
pick it up under AP Taylor.
I managed that. You know me.
I didn't even think about that, AP. I'm sorry.
Nothing if not in inventive, Hatter. I've always got somewhere to sort something out. We managed.
Can you tell I teased him today about sending it to AP Taylor? But on a side note, AP, how cool is it that your friends keep saying to you, oh, wow, I'd like to have that on my walls. What a compliment to your art.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's Deb, you've seen it. It started 8 or 10 months ago, and it was little sketches on an iPad, and it's just gone from there, and it's gone mad. So, you know, I'm just been incredibly fortunate that there's obviously some ability sitting there that I had no idea was there. So anyway, so I keep on going because I enjoy the heck out of it. And because each time I do something, it just fills me with great joy. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and keep
yeah.
up with that palette knife work because it's a fascinating realm of art. My grandmother did palette knife paintings of the ocean, and she'd get that movement in the waves with the palette knife. It was absolutely just fantastic. So stick with that. This is
hold
a beautiful
that.
Piece.
Hold that thought, Linda. Hold that thought.
Yeah.
Because I put one of my ocean ones, which is a palette knife
cool.
one, up on the board. And then I will put a picture of me wearing the jersey so Hatter can see forever that I actually do have the thing in my possession physically. Even though it did go to AP Taylor. I still did get it. There you go.
Does it fit?
Yeah. Really well. It's terrific fit, Hatter. It was made for me.
Certainly was.
You know, literally. No, it was. It's just, you know, it could not have been a better size. Yeah, how's that? If you'd put me in front of a mirror and got me fitted out for a jersey, it would not have been a better fit than this.
Right on. Good.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So thank you. I'm attempting to put something on the board, but this is Adelaide, and the internet's even worse
okay.
here in Melbourne. The internet in Melbourne's bad enough. The internet here is just like somebody riding a bike. It's just dreadful. Hopefully there's a Wi-Fi or something I can get myself attached to, and I'll put it up there. Okay. Well, Deb, I better let you get back to doing the show and all that stuff because I've taken up a whole heap of time, and you were behind time anyway. So, you know. So
all
I've
right.
now
well,
posted me in the shirt. Hatter, you have a look on the board. Look at that. It's an absolutely perfect fit. It couldn't
it
be
is.
A better
yeah.
fit.
Cool.
Yeah, could not be a better fit. So thank you. And so I'm excited.
Cool.
I have no idea what I'm doing with the American football stuff, but I'm sure I'll make it up as I go along. There's a whole heap of guides, most of which I'll ignore. And
don't
we'll
believe
see how
him.
I go.
He did fine. Don't believe him. He did fine last year.
I traded my way to a decent team. Had I traded my way to a decent team? I think I traded 10 times more than anybody else. I had player after player going through. It was a railway station. So That's what I did last year, and I'll probably do the same this year. So we'll see how I go. Who knows? So, anyways, but yeah, no, I have my shirt on for the draft, which is what I said we would do, and so we're doing it from Adelaide. And Linda, look out! At some point, this water picture will appear on the page at some point because it is Adelaide. So.
I did hear back from everyone, so we are absolutely on at 9 a.m. your time tomorrow for the draft.
Oh, okay, cool. Which is 8:30 a.m. my time in Adelaide, because it's a half an hour time difference. So there you go, 8:30 in the morning for me.
Okay, well then, 7 in the U.S. and 8:30 in Adelaide, and have a great morning.
8:30 in Adelaide, yeah. Thank you very much, and... as I said, at some point, I promise I will get this picture through to you, Linda, even if it kills me, which it probably will.
Don't let it do that, AP.
No. It's just so slow. Just so. And they don't even have an internet, for God's sake. You know how most hotels, you know, you sit down and you grab the key and you open the thing and it says, well, give you internet access? It doesn't even have that. Jesus Christ, you know, blimey, talk about going back to bloody Stone Age, jeepers creepers, we don't even have a Wi-Fi, lordy, help me. Anyway, I'll get over myself. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Deb. Thanks, Linda. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Ada.
Thank
you. Bye, AP.
See ya.
Okay, see you soon.
Alrighty. And... before I push play, let me say hello to Ms. Sky Darkholm. Hey, Sky. Glad to see you.
Hello.
How you doing?
How are you? Good. How are you guys?
Hi, Sky.
I had a million poems, and we're down to about 8, so we're getting there. Sky, do you need to go before I push record or play, or are you good with going after this recording?
Oh, no, of course. After your order, absolutely.
Okay, cool. And, Linda, when you go to look on the board to click on Gerald's link, you will see that AP added a wave, the latest wave.
I see it. It's beautiful. Wow.
All right, now click on Gerald's piece, which is right above the wave, and I'll push play.
Artistic Composition, written and read by Gerald Green. The cozy Trailways bus, with high-back seats, invited sleep on the overnight ride from Atlanta to Tallahassee. Reading lights turned off one by one throughout the night, and I drifted off to a pleasant place. I awoke at 6, my normal time for spiritual exercise, unsure at first of where I was, but as I looked out the window to my right, a captivating scene for just a moment caught my eye. Without a thought, I leaped to my feet and ran down the aisle to the bus's door. I told the driver that he must stop and let me go immediately. He seemed a little frightened at my demeanor, stopping the bus and retrieving my duffel bag before leaving me at the side of the empty road in the dim morning light. I walked a few hundred yards back to what I'd seen and dug into my bag for my camera. Without hesitation, I framed the shot and captured this piece of history. The vintage Model A with rust-covered hood and worn-out seat from the 1930s was parked beneath a 1920s red Firestone sign that hung above a 1940s red Texaco gas pump in front of a 1950s red Coca-Cola sign hanging on the ivy-covered building. Thick clouds prevented sunshine, muting glory, adding realism to what once was that struggled with reliability, providing minimal luxury now resting in a nuclear world. I never found an editor who understood the value of that long-neglected place and now I'm sharing it with you to measure your reaction and test your judgment.
How cool. I like the way he, the way he approached this as like the piece of real estate that time forgot, long neglected, which sometimes you stumble across them and they're just so cool. Like there are people that those antique gas pumps, and then look at that car, that amazing, amazing car that's there. And to be honest, I love how the ivy is climbing the pillars and stuff like that. I don't know that I would, like, say if I bought it, I would want to put a new roof on and do a lot of upgrades. But I don't know that I would tear down that ivy, because I think that ivy walls are some of the most charming things out there. Total side note, I don't know why I felt I needed to say that, but it's true. But I like, I awoke at 6, my normal time for spiritual exercise, unsure of first of where I was, but as I looked out my window to my right, a brilliant scene for just a moment caught my eye, and without a thought I leaped to my feet and ran down the narrow aisle to the bus's door, and I told the driver that he must stop and let me go immediately. I think there was like an intensity there, and he seemed a little frightened by my demeanor. And you, nowadays, you know, you show a little bit of enthusiasm and people are afraid that you might pull out a gun and shoot them with the sad state the world's in. So it's not a wonder that the bus driver was a bit intimidated by the way he was acting. But I walked a few hundred yards back to what I'd seen. And then the next stanza, a vintage Model A with a rusted hood, worn out from the 30s and parked beneath a 1920 red Firestone sign. And even that sign is something that people collect. So it's like right there in that picture are priceless treasures to a whole bunch of different people and bring back priceless memories and existence here with how they touched Gerald, like with that 1950s Coca-Cola sign. I mean, everything that he mentioned, the Firestone sign, the gas pumps, Coca-Cola stuff is valuable. A lot of people collect Coca-Cola items. So it's just like, and he mentioned the ivy-covered building. And like I said, for me, you put the ivy on the building and I'm already enchanted. So I think that's my favorite stanza, because he covered the entire piece of art from the car to the ivy on the building and brought it to life. And I like how the thought of it hit him so with such intensity that he needed to stop the bus and get out and go there. So I really, really enjoyed his approach on this. Fun piece. Hatter, what you think?
Yeah, I like the way he described the scene, you know, the different decades for the – I wonder if he got it right, each decade. I think he did. I'm looking at the picture. Got the gas pumps in the car, sign, Coca-Cola sign. Yeah, I'm curious if he got it right. I love the way he wrote it.
And, Sky, could you give us a comment and then read your poem for us?
Hi, Sky.
Hi, Heather. Gerald always has a unique perspective in whatever poem he brings, and I really like it because it's like a different kind of story or, you know, it's very intimate. You can just settle down into it. It has so much detail, and I think Hatter kind of hit on, like, the decades. You know, he wasn't just saying, oh, this is a place. He was stopping the bus. He was going out. He was describing, you know, the decades of memorabilia that was showed. And then, of course, he throws it back at the reader and saying, you know, what do you think at the end, which is a brilliant way to end and kind of have the reader kind of say, okay, well, what kind of value do I place on this as well, and not just having it said to them, but actually thinking about it themselves, and I like that about it. Really well done.
And if you wanted to, even though Stephen had mentioned it earlier, but why don't you tell us about your show coming up first?
I know you're crunched for time. If Stephen already did, that's great. Come visit me Thursday.
Okay.
I'm good.
Alrighty.
This is called Epigraph, Heaven's Weight in Gold by Sky Darkle. No plainer can the token be, would be a lie on raven's tongue. For in the shoals of furbelows are not the colors of tedium. Instead, those flounces of lead, those petal dawns looped in vine, where sharper thorns cash an orient girding eye, stow tiny shimmers of light. They tread moonless orbs, a guild of epoch and realm, the mythos of distant shores, and those that yet steer the helm. End poem.
I'm having a coughing fit. Linda, will you comment, please?
Yeah, Sky, what a beautiful poem. Man, I love the beginning of it. No plainer can a token be, would be a lie on a raven's tongue. That's just, I mean, it's such a beautiful and profound line to open your poem with. And then you just go on into this beautiful speech poetically that is, you know, it's just something that makes a poem pop. And you've done it here. The lines you've chosen are just the perfect pieces of puzzle to put together, and you've done it. And I really like the beauty of this piece, so thank you for sharing it.
Thank you, Linda.
You're very welcome, Sky.
Sorry about that. I had to find my inhaler. Sky, I love the wording that you went with. No plainer can a token be, would be a lie on a raven's tongue. And it is a lie because there's nothing plain about the art that you chose. And something struck me, the token, because there are birds, like I think it's ravens and possibly crows too, that are bewildered by shiny objects like that. And they have a tendency to be little, for lack of a better way to put it, cat burglars. And they gather stuff, and they have these strongholds, and they take it back to their... And for some reason, the picture, when I saw it, it made me think of that, wondering how many things that bird collected and how pretty the area. Like, they must have some of the prettiest nests around, because I remember reading a story about birds, I think it was England, where the windows would be open with, like, no screens, and they would literally fly in the window and take jewelry and stuff off the top of dressers. And for a while, they thought there was a cat burglar. And then somebody had saw the bird and followed it back, and they found most of the stuff. It was one particular bird that was flying in and out of windows, grabbing things. So all these things went through my mind in just your first line. That I don't know why, just the word token set me off. And I got like a bit of a gasp, and then I tried to choke on my coffee. But like a little bit further, where sharper thorn cachet and Ariette girding eye, so tiny shimmers of light. And again, that hit me, the tiny shimmers of light. Anything that the sun shines on and makes it glitter, they would consider their own treasure or their own tokens and grab them and take them. So I thought that this was really cool, and the wording is awesome. And I'm probably totally off of what you meant, but it just took me on this adventure of these birds and how they like their little tokens and how they collect them just like a person would with their favorite objects. So I thought this was a really, really fun brevity. Great share.
You know what they found in the crows and ravens that they do, why they do that? They're the one animal between all birds and any other animal. The other animals, they'll watch you. They're looking at your eyes and everything. A crow, a raven, a magpie, those, the COVIDs, they look at what you're doing. They look at what you're touching, what you're doing. So they're not looking at, like a deer would look at you, just stare at you and your eyes and your body language. A crow's looking at what you're doing. He's curious of what you're doing. That's the difference between, they went from like number 7 in intelligence to number 3.
Yeah, you know, when my son was about 7, there was a crow that was coming down and picking at his hair. And I finally had to get my friend with red hair to take hair out of her brush and leave it on the hood of the car for this bird, because it was trying to make a nest out of my son's hair, but it was scaring the shit out of my son. And, they also like they can utilize tools to get their food. We had a walnut tree where the crows would get the walnuts and take them up on top of a light pole, a telephone pole, and then drop them down and get them smashed on the ground where they can easily open the nut and get the meat out. They're fabulous, intelligent creatures.
And then memory is generation. They pass memory through the generations, which is remarkable.
Yeah. Well, Sky, I'm sure that you are thrilled to have sparked this conversation between all of us, but I don't mean this in a bad way, but you sound so exhausted. I bet you want us to just shut up so you can leave.
No, I don't. You're fine. Aww. It was the first day of school today. It was a lot. I know, I just wanted to say, though, and no, I love listening to you guys, but I just wanted to say that to your comment, I don't think that people ever get it wrong. Sometimes maybe if it's like a really powerful, but once you write something, you give it to the reader, they take it how as they want. And I think it's amazing how people can take things and see different things. And then I write a poem and then I say, oh, yeah, it does sound like that when you read it like that, and when I see it from a different perspective. So I love that. You know, this one, I was just really, if you zoom in on that eye, there's like a little gold rim on, and I was so taken in by this raven's eye that I was just imagining like worlds, you know, underneath that eye and all the things that they might have seen. But in a way, that is collecting things. So it just worked out that way. That's a cool way to describe it as well. But thank you guys so much. And, you know, I hope you have a good night with the rest of your poems if you're going to do them. It's a lot on there. So,
yeah.
Really well done.
Definitely a lot. But with the stuff that happened with Blog Talk and all, I wound up with a backlog, and I want to try and get them in. So we shall see. But you have a good night. I appreciate you calling us. You know, with such a busy day that you took the time to call in too. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Bye, Linda. Bye, Heather.
Bye, Sky.
Bye, Sky.
All right. So if you guys would click on Jenny's, I'll read that one for her. And this is called Take Me to the Moon With You, by Jenny the Deep. And here we go. Howling at the crimson moon, cursing like the werewolves do, unable to find my way, in the dark I will remain. Never again will love bloom. Death took you away too soon. Now seeing red, feeling blue, your love I refuse to waste. Never could you be replaced. My love will always be true. After all we have been through, there is no me without you. I can feel you here. Please stay. Make the darkness go away. Take me with you to the moon. End poem. Well,
wow.
You know, I think that the sadness and the loss and the longing for that love is oozing off the lines, and we're just talking about three little stanzas that were powerful enough to bring us to the end filled with emotion, which really shows a power in a pen, in my opinion. So amazing brevity, Jenny. Thank you so much for sending it in, and it was my honor to be your reader. And I think I will get a comment from Linda for her, please.
Yeah, this is like a great limerick. You know, the form that she wrote it in is quite cool. But the meaning of this poem is just heartfelt. It's passionate. It's, you know, romantic. It's sad. It's very sad. And it kind of gave me, you know, it gave me feelings about this poem. And that's rare for a poem to do that to me. But the way Jenny writes, she pulls you in with her, you know, either dark, the darkness of her heart, or the great love and passion that she's writing about. And this one was a little of both, actually. But the passion in this is just insurmountable of all things. But I loved it. So, Jenny, thank you for sharing it. You're just becoming an awesome, awesome poet, and I love it. I love watching poets grow from becoming new ones, and then, you know, throughout the time they spend here on All Poetry, how their poems just, I mean, the meanings are so much deeper. And Jenny, your poetry has come so far since you started on All Poetry. But yeah, I love to hear your stuff. You're a wonderful poet. Thank you for sharing.
Great comment. Now let me see here. The way I am seeing this now, with the poems that I have left, everybody got to have, well, let me see. Hatter's got his second. Jenny's got her second. Wayne's got a second, and Gerald's
no,
got
I'm not,
a second.
No, I'm not going to read.
Wait a minute. I'm going to take the one, two, three, the four poems that are people's second reads and take them with me to my next week's show. So that will just leave Lockdown Lark's poem and Pee Wee's poem. So, Linda, would you read for Pee Wee?
Sure.
You can get rid of mine.
No, I'm not going to get rid of it, Hatter. I'm just going to put it on next week's board, and I'll start the show with the four that were left over, and then that way we only have two more to do, and we can shut down for tonight. So, Linda, please read for Pee-wee.
Yes, I will. The Dance by Pee-wee Cusin. Lulling me in the molten and fiery depths, trying to close my brain off to the advance. 'Twas for naught, as deadlocked I slept, waking terror, sleeping death at the dance. Wearing a rogue mask and bearing a rose, continents I ascertained by itchy touch of breath. Nearing him, sight began shimmering merlot, bloody paths and snow drawn a map to death. Elegance regal refined, wore an air of distinction. Troubled mind at ease, I followed him below. I felt rejuvenation, exquisitely adept extinction emanating from sanguine lifeblood and snow, swooping me into arms now masked to cheek. Surreptitious whispers gave his word, ring of love. My bride in disemboweled the entrails of the meek, kneeling, offering me the ruby scepter, groan of life of the sepia velvet-handed orator of death. I accepted. Petrichor, scented wine, began to pour. Then came the magenta hue felt within my breath, waltzing the sandstone earth towards the door. Lightning flashed and flickered. Masquerade again. Sashay to the macabre tune beneath bloodshot moon. The dance of death on my breath knows no end. Mask in hand in our land. Hour comes soon. In poem.
Wow, great read, Linda. Thank you. Lulling me in the molten and fiery depths, trying to close my brain off to the advance. 'Twas for naught as deadlocked I slept, waking terror, sleeping death at the dance. There's something there, the thought of being in a nightmare in the molten fiery depths. It was like you get the chills at the thought. Deadlocked I slept, waking terror, sleeping death at the dance. I mean, just that one stanza there is really potent. And where is it? Towards the middle. Swooping me into arms, now masked to cheek. Now I'm starting to picture the artichokes. Serpentis whispers, gave his word, ring of love, my bride, disemboweled the entrails of the meat, kneeling, offering me a ruby scepter. The visuals in this are pretty wicked, and I'm feeling bad because I don't have the red board up anymore to show you the art, just to, so you could see how much he totally brought this to life. After I transferred everything over, I erased that topic from the board, or I would grab it for you guys, and I put so many different pictures up that it would be nearly impossible to find the red stuff in the middle of everything else that I posted. But the visuals here, the feel of it, he totally brought it to life and gave it a story, and I see that he's also won an award for this from Papa T, so congratulations on that, because it's definitely an award-worthy piece. I'm glad you were feeling up to writing for a while. I had to go check on him because I hadn't seen him around and I was concerned. But the visuals, shimmering Merlot and back to that bride, disembowel. I mean, just so many wicked spots in here that gave it a horror story-ish / Phantom of the Opera / creepy. I think, I mean, it's a brilliant, brilliant piece. And Linda, you read it. Before I read the next one, you want to tell me what you thought?
Yeah, well, Pee-wee stuff is always just so profound, and this is a perfect example of his intense mind. I mean, he's got this way about his writing that is just so just in depth and beautiful. But the dance of death is what I picture when he's talking about wearing a rogue mask and bearing a rose. Continents I ascertained by icy touch of breath. Nearing him, sight began shimmering Merlot. Bloody paths in snow, drawn a map to death. It's just so I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but it's profound, and it makes you think. And I get this picture of two lovers in Notre Dame, the steps of Notre Dame, dancing about with masks for a masquerade, and finding themselves stuck on the steps, you know, seeing each other and feeling the same. They have this little dance together of death. But, yeah, Pee-wee is, like, just intense. And I find it a little hard to comment on his stuff because his writing is just so cool. And I forget, you know, the words that I want to use when I read his poetry. But all I can say is this is just an awesome, awesome piece, Pee-wee. Thank you for sharing it.
Great comment, Linda. Appreciate that. An awesome read, too. And just to repeat myself, I'm going to read for Lockdown Larks in a moment, and then that will finish the last of the poems for the red prompt. And then the four that I'm carrying over are Hatter's, Jenny's, Wayne's, and Gerald. And all four of those, since I paid attention as we read them out, are for the whales. So when we do the blue show next week, we will start with the four whale poems and then carry on into the blue. And I will send each of the, well, Hatter, you're here to hear me, but I will send Jenny and Wayne and Gerald each a message telling them so. So this will be the last poem of the night. Let me put that on the board so you guys can click on it. Tell me when you see it.
Okay, I got it.
Hatter?
Yeah, I got it.
Okie dokie. This is called A Dream's Destiny by Lockdown Larks. And here we go. Once life is done, where shall I go? Beyond the expanding universe. The problem is I just don't know. Time allows not a perception reverse. Shall I be quantum, joining a red hue, a blaze of crimson photon emission, a spectral power coming into view, still retaining the prism of cognition? Ah, yes. Maybe to another dimension, where ruby is the dominant light, traveling in a light-speed ascension to a place with heavenly foresight. The physics have still to be found, how we ride particles of cosmic energy. Until then, I must keep my feet on the ground, love living, and trust in my dream's destiny. Time passes only in one direction, as a flame and light reflection. Wow. You know, I like the little science nods in here. It's a shame Dave had to go. I think he would have got a kick out of this one. Like, shall I be quantum, joining a red hue, a blaze of crimson photon emission? You know, I bet you that Lockdown and David could have some pretty interesting science conversations, just judging by this poem. Because I've often heard some of these aspects or wording used in David's poems, especially when he's writing about the Dark Mother. But I like traveling in a light speed ascension to a place with heavenly foresight. And I wouldn't have thought that there would have been anything mentioning heavenly foresight when you go back to the art, because it's like this evil looking skeleton with red laser eyes, and there's red beams all around him, and he's in the aura, and the aura is pretty scary. So to think of the heavenly foresight and ascension and stuff like that, the contrast was pretty clever all the way through. I think that Lockdown probably had a fun time with this one, and I think that he spoke to the art brilliantly with his words. And it was my honor to be his reader Hatter, what did you think?
Yeah, I like the way he writes. It's unique to say, and I like having to figure out where he's going and what he's trying to say. Yeah, the physics in it, the quantum physics reference, Dave would like it. Anytime he says red light, he's the red shift. You know that. But yeah, nice job, Bakhtan.
Great comment. All right, so we had a ton of poetry tonight. I'm not really big on having carryovers, but we've had so many issues with Blog Talk that for four, that's not too bad considering the monster list that I had at the beginning of the show. I want to just remind everyone that next week the topic is blue, and it's more of a free-for-all. I don't have any quotes that you have to try to incorporate. You're never required to use the color word bank, but it's always there for you in case you want it. Yeah.
Are there pictures?
Was Petrichor part of a word bank?
No.
I love that word.
Yeah, you don't
I noticed
it. You don't see it on the show twice, usually. It's interesting.
Yeah, I noticed
I love
too
that smell.
That pattern. It's not a commonly used word, but it did seem to fit for a few people tonight.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah,
absolutely.
But next week, like I said, it's blue, and there is art to choose from, but there's nothing else that you have to accompany it with. So you want to run along with Grover, or you want to, you know, I think I have everything there from the Cookie Monster to lightning and blueberries and butterflies, and there's even a one or two beautiful tiaras. There's flowers. So there's all kinds of beautiful blue art, but it can take you anywhere you want to because you don't have any quotes or anything to follow. So that's next week on my show. And then just a quick rundown, Wednesday at 9 with Hatter, Thursday at 10 with Sweet Pea, Friday at 9 with Stephen and Hatter, and then on Saturday night, Hatter, you want to tell about Saturday's show before I do the close?
Saturday show, yeah. The prompt is 100 times 1,000 different ways. Whatever
so wherever
that means to you.
Yeah, wherever that took you is what Hatter would like to hear from you. So on that note, I would like to, of course, thank my board, Hatter and AP and Sweet Pea. I appreciate you for running things with me. And I want to say thank you to Kay and Steven and Angel and Tony and Lockdown Larks and Jenny and Wayne and Gerald and Linda and Pee-wee and David. I appreciate all the poetry and all the comments and just getting to spend time with you all. I'm amazed every single time that button goes live and your poems are presented, and they're always amazing. If it wasn't for how awesome all of you are, the shows wouldn't be half as good as they are. So we all, as hosts and hostesses, appreciate you more than you realize, and keep the amazing poems coming because your creativity is brilliant, just as you are. And on that note, I think I will mosey on over here, and there is an awesome group that actually Hatter introduced us all to called Shinedown, and they are really big right now on the radio with some of their new songs, and as a matter of fact, I think it's September 15th, they will be headlining here in my area. And the local stations are really playing a lot of their work because you know, of course, they're pushing the concert. And every time I hear one of their new songs or one of their covers, I'm blown away. And even though the first one he ever had us listen to was for, of course, her name was Alice, I think that it would be fitting if we went out and heard them singing that song. So, again, thank you all. Appreciate you with love and respect. And let's go out of here with Shine Down. Thank
Her
you,
name
sir.
Was Alan.
If I had a world of my own, everything would be nonsense. Nothing would be what it is, because everything would be what it isn't.
I invite you to a world where there is no such thing as time, and every creature lends themselves to change your state of mind. And the girl that chased the rabbit, drank the wine and took the pill, has locked herself in limbo to see how it truly feels to stand outside your virtue. No one can ever you, or so they say. Her name is Alice.
Toning it down for a half a second because I forgot to say thank you to Sky, Sky, Sky. Back to our song.
And even
for introducing us to Shine Down, Hatter. Linda, I sent you a link in your inbox. And again, thank you, everyone.
Catch it now.
Appreciate you. And many of the members of A Team of Voices will be drafting tomorrow night for fantasy football, so we'll see you on Wednesday when we join Hatter in his tribute to George Harrison. Night, everyone. Thanks, Hatter.
Night, Deb.
Thanks.
Night.